Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. We are so glad you have joined us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation is going to be with Mary Lou Hernandez, who is a licensed clinical social worker with Banner Alzheimer's Institute, and we're going to be discussing avoiding arguments. Janice, you've probably heard this phrase before. No one has ever won an argument with someone with Alzheimer's disease, so it's best just not to engage.
I have heard that, but I have also heard that it's so challenging and it's so hard. In our support groups, people will talk about how difficult it is. You know, maybe their person with dementia misplaced an item in an odd spot. Like maybe they put the remote control in the freezer and then they blame other people in the house for stealing the remote and putting them in an unusual spot. So things like that really can start arguments, and it can, you know, be like volcano erupting.
For sure. You know, I think the root of all of these arguments is that someone just feels so strongly and so passionately about this subject. But there's many things that come up as dementia progresses, changes that happen in the brain as part of the disease that cause these arguments to happen more frequently. So I'm really looking forward to our guest today.
Absolutely. You know, I want people to be able to live in peace when these issues arise. So I can't wait to hear what Mary Lou has to say to us today.
I love that. Live in peace. Mary Lou, help us learn to live in peace with our person with dementia. But before you do that, I'm curious, could you tell us a little bit about your journey? What led you to connect with the dementia community?
Hi, well, thank you for having me. Good question. I worked in the hospital for many, many years before I started working at Banner Alzheimer's Institute. And I've always had an interest in adult care and geriatrics. I actually have a certificate in gerontology in addition to my master's degree. So when Banner Alzheimer's Institute was about to open, I had heard and was very interested in being able to be part of such a wonderful setting and being more engaged with families. And was one of the first social workers hired and still here and very happy to be part of a wonderful team in managing care. So that's how I ended up in my current situation and my involvement with dementia. So the question was, why are there more arguments? That's a very, very involved question, but a couple things that come to my mind. I think first of all, having short-term memory loss, people don't remember things they forgot. And so it's very easy to not remember when something occurred, such as why they put the remote control in the freezer, you know, as was mentioned. And then it's very easy to blame somebody else. And, you know, if somebody's blaming you for something, you're like, I didn't do that. And yes, you did. And it can cause an argument, right? So that's certainly one of the very first things that I see happening is that short-term memory loss. And it takes a while for families to learn and understand what that means and how quickly people can forget.
Now that makes sense, but it's not just the short-term memory loss that's leading to arguments. There's also changes in the frontal lobe and executive function as well, right?
Right. So the other thing that happens in even very mild memory loss is changes in executive function, which is changes in the ability to plan, organize, and execute activities. So things that maybe were very easy to do and part of the routine become a little more difficult and a little more challenging, you know, and when that happens, you know, family members might not realize that something that their person did so well, maybe like the woman, I think about somebody that had this potato salad recipe, a woman, and we're going to have you make the potato salad because you do it so well. And then all of a sudden it doesn't turn out. And the family's like, well, what did you do wrong? And it's like, I didn't do anything wrong. And it's just because there's more steps in the organization of trying to do a recipe. There's a lot of steps, even though it may have been something that was so routine. So that ability to plan and organize becomes difficult. Involve, you know, you missed a bill payment. You didn't pay the electricity, and now our electricity's been turned off because you haven't paid the bill in 3 months. What did you do? And so those things can happen because that higher level thinking and planning is more impaired.
And I've heard different caregivers say, it just feels like my person has lost the ability to have any logic whatsoever.
So logic and reasoning is impaired. Again, it's that executive function, logic, explanations. Sometimes that's too much information for the person with memory loss. You know, things that they think are making sense may not make sense. And you're trying to explain, well, you know, you have to pay the bill every month and you have to put it on the calendar and you have to do this. And all of that, you know, could be too much information for them. And sometimes the more you try to reason and explain why somebody should do something, the less their brain is going to accept that and remember it, right? Because short-term memory loss, you might give them all these good reasons and all these wonderful thoughts. And then the next thing they know, you know, they don't remember anything you said.
And I think too, arguments, as I said earlier, are people feel strongly, they feel passionately, there's emotional attachment to these, and a person's ability to regulate their emotions changes too as well, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, we definitely see personality changes when somebody has dementia. There's more impulsivity, more living in the moment is what I would say. So sometimes people will do something based on what they're feeling at the present time and not really understand the consequences of it. And so, you know, living in the moment is more, you know, I'm going to do this now because it feels good, but maybe it's not the best thing to do.
Well, I was thinking about living in the moment, and it's kind of like losing your filter or something that you're finding, wow, that's nothing like them. Where did that come from?
Definitely like losing the filter. And what we see with that is people can be out and about and all of a sudden say something that doesn't sound very nice. Oh, look at that lady. Look at how she's dressed. Or, you know, I've had grandfathers see their granddaughter and it's like, how come she's dressed that way? Look at her funny hair. Or, you know, I've even had people go in the store and they see a candy bar they want and they get home with their wife and it's in the pocket. And the wife is like, I didn't pay for that candy bar. That's not right. And they didn't think they were doing anything wrong. Just a reaction. They saw the candy bar they wanted it, they put it in their pocket. And of course, then you have the spouse that's like outraged that they would do something like that because they've never done things like that before.
And I think really the root of a lot of this is getting back to having unrealistic expectations of your person. I mean, things have changed from the way they were before, but we're still trying to hold them to the same standards that we've always held them to.
And I think that's very true with spouses that have had various responsibilities and they, you know, my husband did this and as the wife, I did this and he should be able to pay the bills because he always did. You know, he should be able to take the garbage out because he always did. Well, maybe he doesn't know that the blue cans go on one day and the black cans go on another day. You know, and I think even with adult children, they want to be respectful of their parent. And they want, you know, everybody wants to continue the sense of dignity and self-worth. And so, especially with adult children wanting to be respectful, I think it's sometimes hard for them to realize that maybe the parent isn't doing things the way they used to, and that maybe they have to step in and there's some role reversal, and that can be difficult. And but even with couples where, you know, responsibilities are shared, it's sometimes hard to know that that person is struggling with a task that they've always done. I think the sadness of seeing that maybe they can't do it.
I wonder about the word confabulation. I've heard that there are a lot of issues with that as well.
So confabulation is sort of the brain filling in information when it really doesn't have the correct information. So what we see with that is sometimes made up stories or stories that happen, but all of a sudden pieces of the story are different. And I think about one of my longtime couples where the husband was a dentist and the wife, and he would tell all these stories and she'd be there, "That never happened. What are you talking about?"
Mm-hmm.
He would get all upset. But, you know, in his mind, he was telling a story that he thought it happened, and it was a good story. And actually, the people he was telling it to probably never knew that it wasn't real or not. You know, she would be saying, "No, that never happened." And even some of the adult children, you know, the parent will be telling a story about when they were young. And it's like, "I don't remember that. I don't think that ever happened. I wasn't home when you're talking about that. I was away at college." But, you know, a lot of times the brain with that long-term memory, it's still there, but sometimes the stories do get mixed up and confabulation can definitely happen. And with that, it's best to just, you know, listen with an interest instead of arguing, because what are you going to gain by bringing them to reality? Because in their mind, the story they're telling is real. But it certainly can cause an argument. And I think thinking of the situation with my couple, you know, she finally realized what's the point. And she finally decided, well, I'm just going to let him tell the stories. And I think it gave her a sense of relief when she realized that.
And it seems like in that situation and so many others, it's caregivers almost having to come to this understanding of their relationship has changed. They're no longer on this equal playing field anymore.
And no doubt that's very, very difficult. And I think there's a lot of factors with that. So what that means is the well spouse is doing a lot more. And so the responsibilities that the well spouse is taking over from the person with memory loss is putting more responsibilities and stress on them. Now, another cause for arguments can be because all of a sudden the well spouse is taking over something I did because maybe they weren't doing it well. So sometimes relinquishing the checkbook can be very difficult, or taking away the credit cards because perhaps they're buying things they don't need, or they're giving the credit card number to people that call because all of these scammers and solicitors that are going to get your information in no matter which way they can, and they're getting very tricky. That's a cause for argument. You took away my credit card. You took away my checkbook. You took away my driver's license. Very common that the well spouse gets blamed for some of these things. And it's not because they're doing it to be mean. It's because they're doing it for safety reasons or to prevent unwanted solicitation, or to make sure that the bills are getting paid and your electricity isn't getting turned off. But it can cause arguments because, you know, the person with memory loss still wants to hold on to that sense of independence. And that can be a real struggle as the well spouse or even the adult child is trying to take over some of the responsibilities that's becoming more difficult for the person with memory loss to do, but they don't realize it.
Oh, of course. I can imagine how many conflicts arise from those things and how much stress that has to cause the caregivers.
Without a doubt, a lot of caregiver stress. And again, you know, I think caregiver stress is very common with our caregivers, and, you know, education, learning more, and trying to see what's happening and to get support from others is so essential.
So we've gone through a lot of different areas that contribute to why we're having more arguments with our person. I wonder, Mary Lou, could you share some strategies to successfully deal with arguments?
Sure. As you heard in the beginning, you're never going to win an argument with a person with dementia. So, you know, we have a little tip card that that we use that you don't want to correct, you don't want to reason with, you don't want to coerce somebody or convince them that what you're saying is right. Some of the strategies that we look at is you want to agree with what they're saying with. You want to sort of be in their world. It doesn't mean that they're right and you're wrong. It just means that you're focusing on their thoughts and where they're at the time. So the example I always use when I have family in the clinic is if your person says that the wall you're looking at, which is white, is really hot pink, you're going to say it's a beautiful pink. Because why would you want to say, oh, what are you talking about? It's a white wall. But what is it going to gain? If they think it's pink and there's no harm in them thinking that, there's nothing wrong with that. You want to apologize, which is really more of a reassurance, because if there's a disagreement, sometimes the way to come out of that is to say, oh, I'm sorry that, you know, that I'm sorry that we're not in agreement, or I'm sorry this occurred, or I'm sorry you feel that way. It doesn't necessarily mean that you did anything wrong, but sometimes I'm sorry takes the anger out of a disagreement and it brings some togetherness. So apologizing is a great strategy. Another strategy is distracting. If you're in a disagreement or the person's really upset about something, sometimes getting their mind off of it with a distraction can be really helpful. It could be, let's go have some ice cream that I know you love. Let's go listen to some music. Oh, I think somebody's at the door. Let's go see. I heard a noise out there. Let's go take a walk and check the mail. You know, think of some things that could distract them. Mm-hmm. So maybe their mind gets off of it. And that's where you use the short-term memory to your advantage, because if they're distracted, they might forget about what they were upset about. And then playing dumb, you know, you might say, you didn't tell me about this. And I don't know why I didn't know we were going to see our family today. You never told me. Well, you might have told them 3 times, 4 times, 10 times, but then it's easier to say, well, maybe I forgot. Maybe I am having some memory issues. Well, I don't really, you know, I'm sorry. I guess I forgot. You know, I didn't think about it, or they just told me at the last minute. Sort of going with the flow and not getting into, well, I did tell you, because they don't remember you told them and they can't remember what they forgot.
I like how you said to just go with flow. And one thing you talked about is sometimes we want to tell somebody something 10 times and we think that the more we tell them, the more they're going to remember, and we just need to keep it simple.
Yeah. So, keeping things short, simple, sometimes even more vague can be helpful, because a lot of information can be confusing for the person with memory loss, and it can make them more upset and frustrated. And, you know, I sort of think about a family that was, they were selling the parents' house because the parents were living with them. And they just involved the mom in all the details. And the mom just got upset and angry. And then she would say, you're not telling me anything. And even though they told her, so they were involving her in something that was too much for her. They were trying to keep her involved because they were wanting to be respectful, but it was way too much for her to process. You have to really look at how much can the person with memory loss absorb. And if you're trying to give them too much, that will cause them to be frustrated. They're not going to remember. And when people are frustrated, they get irritable and start arguments.
I keep getting back to kind of this emotional component of the argument for people and how important it is to listen beyond whatever it is that you're arguing about in the moment and really trying to identify what is the emotional experience this person is mm-hmm. having.
And without a doubt, because, you know, sometimes it's the feeling behind it that they're more worried than the argument. So I sort of think about people not forgetting about an appointment. They may be asking repeatedly, when's my doctor's appointment? When's my doctor's appointment? And families might say the night before, you're going to go to the doctor's tomorrow at noon. But they might get up in the middle of the night and start getting ready because they're so worried about missing the appointment. And then you know, the wife will be saying, why are you up? It's 2 a.m. and you're getting dressed. And, you know, it's because they're scared of forgetting about it, but they can't really say that. And I think that, you know, frustration especially leads to irritability. So if it's too much, if it's overwhelming, over demanding, too stimulating, all of that can lead to a sense of feeling like argumentative. I think about people that are at a big family gathering and there's a lot of noisy children, and the person with memory loss is sort of yelling at the kids to be quiet because it's too much stimulation in their brain and it's overwhelming for them. Yeah, and that's so where you look at keeping things simpler, shorter, less noise, less commotion.
And you talked about stepping away from a big group to be a more peaceful setting, getting away from that commotion. But what about the caregiver? I remember when I was raising toddlers, I heard someone said to put yourself in timeout sometimes. Sometimes you just need to walk away from the situation and then go back.
Definitely, that's one of the other strategies. If something is just not resolving, stepping away is a great thing. And when I talk about stepping away to families, I don't just say, well, I'm going to leave now because we're never going to resolve this. You have a reason to step away. Oh, I'm sorry. I really have to go to the restroom. You know, oh, I hear the doorbell. So you have a reason to step away. Oh, I hear the timer on the stove, or I've got to go put this on to start cooking. If you have a reason other than that argument to step away, it doesn't seem as abrupt or leave a negative emotion, so that they may think, oh, you're leaving, and then they may forget about it. Stepping away is definitely a helpful thing. Sometimes even taking a breath before you answer might help you to answer in a calmer way.
I think that's great advice. And also the importance of really picking your battles. We're not going to engage on everything, and really thinking about, is safety a concern right here? And if it's not, as you said, fine, the walls are pink. Right. Can we even take it a step further? Is there a way that we could spin this potential argument to our advantage? You know, the example that comes to mind for me would be, you know, someone who's thinking the grandkids are coming this afternoon, even though they may not be. And rather than getting into an argument with them about the grandkids are not coming this afternoon, can we use this as a motivator? Well, if they're coming this afternoon, then we need to take a shower. We need to get the house cleaned up. We need to do all these other things.
Definitely. And then if they're like, well, where are they? They haven't come. Then maybe that's where you use your therapeutic fibbing and saying, oh, you know, they just called and something came up. Or they may forget about that they're going to come because you've distracted them with another activity. So definitely that certainly can be a beneficial thing to do, without a doubt.
Mary Lou, these thoughts and tips have been so helpful. I was hoping to hear how people can live in peace, and you've given us all sorts of tips on how to do that.
Well, thank you. You know, I think it's important that you pick your battles, you know, really realize that you're not giving in. If you're not, you know, if you apologize, it doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means you're focusing on their emotions. And I think that's the key, is focusing on their emotions.
So Mary Lou, let's cut to the chase here. I'm engaging in an argument with my person and they're accusing me of something I didn't do, but I know that I'm right. What should I do?
You're probably never going to win an argument. So I think some of the most difficult things is, yes, you're not my husband or you're not my wife. That can be very, very difficult. It's called Capgras syndrome. But so it's like, I've been married to you for 50 years. How can I not be your husband? When the husband is arguing, yes, I am your husband. Look, here's the pictures. Here's our marriage certificate. Here's our wedding pictures. It's still, you know, you don't look like the guy in the wedding pictures, right? Because the long-term memory has somebody with a lot of hair and maybe body, right? So you don't want to necessarily be right. Sometimes you think of other things to do. I've had husbands go out the door, come back in and say, here I am. Oh, you're back. Thank you. So that's where you have to get creative because again, you know, being right isn't always going to make it better. It could actually make it worse. And the argument could escalate. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but sometimes when people are very upset, they may strike at you. And we don't want that to happen. We want the arguments to de-escalate and not get more upset or violent. Or that's when people leave the house. You know, I've had that recently happen. I got so upset. My wife got so upset. She left the house and wandered down the street. And I had to go in the car looking for her. You have to look at those safety issues. If arguments escalate, the person, again, they're not thinking logically. So they're just going to react, be physical. It could be leaving the house and wandering. And so you want to try to minimize those arguments.
So I'm curious to know what you would advise for someone who maybe finds themselves revisiting the same argument day after day after day. You know, someone wants to drive their car and they are not able to drive anymore, but every single day they get up and they say, I'm ready to make a run to the grocery store or whatever the case may be.
And that's where you have to talk around that, because if you say, you know, your driver's license got suspended and you can't drive, that can be very difficult. Mm. But we use different things. You know, the doctor said you can't drive. No, you're the one that said it. No, it's really the doctor. And I'm so sorry. I know it's such a loss. So that's where you focus on the emotions. But then you also hide the keys so they can't get the keys. Or maybe if it's their car and there's two cars, you get the car out of the line of vision, so it's not a trigger. So sometimes you have to look at what are the triggers to that argument or that same thing that happens day after day. And if you can remove the triggers, some of that may go away. So seeing the car sitting there and not being able to drive it can definitely be a trigger. Many times we say, you know, remove the car. Some people sell it and say, oh, it's at the garage and they're getting parts, but it's taken them forever to buy it, get the parts, they're on back order. And then sometimes when it's out of sight, it eventually comes out of mind.
I also think that there's triggers for the caregiver as well. So I've had a caregiver say about her mom, she's always been hard on me. She's just giving me a hard time. She's always been argumentative. How can you help people reframe their mind and shift to have a more peaceful coexistence?
Yeah, and that's a hard one, because I think sometimes, you know, families will say, you know, they've always been manipulative, you know, or even when they're telling the confabulation stories, they're really lying. And I think that families sometimes see an intent behind it, but when there's memory loss, the ability to be manipulative and intentional is much less common. So, you know, people with memory loss are living in the moment. They're reacting to whatever's happening at the time. So there's not always a forethought about it or what will the consequence be. So I think it's important to, you know, that's a lot of education. You know, maybe they've always been manipulative, but now they probably don't have the insight to do that. Right now, they're just living in the moment. There could be some baseline personality traits that are there, but, you know, it's not with the same intent maybe as it had been in the past. I was just talking to a caregiver whose mother was always, as she's termed it, combative with her. And she really left home young. And now she's caring for her mom because nobody else would care for her. And she actually became more pleasant, which she was surprised about, but she was also having some misperceptions and then, you know, thought that the daughter was hurting her. And it sort of brought her back to those old memories of how her mom mm-hmm. used to. And I know as we talked about it, I was saying, you know, your mom maybe used to be that way, but she was having a misperception that, you know, there was no intent in what she was saying. It was probably just things that were coming out because the filter's gone. But those are difficult, you know, because families remember all the long-term personality traits, and some of them are still there, but some of them are not done with intention. It's just more reaction.
Gosh, Mary Lou, this has just been such an interesting discussion, helping us, you know, better understand the root of all of these arguments that we may be engaging in now, and strategies to better deal with them. I wonder if you could give us your final thought when it comes to avoiding arguments.
Well, I think, again, you know, the whole thing about agreeing, apologizing, distracting, playing dumb, knowing that the person has short-term memory loss and they're not going to remember a lot of information. They're sort of in the moment. And I think for my families, it's important to know that it's a learning curve. You know, all of these things are communication strategies that you have to learn, and you don't wake up one day and do everything differently. Changing how you interact and changing communication is a learning process. So I always stress, focus on your successes. And if something doesn't go right, use it as a learning curve, but don't kick yourself. Don't put yourself down. Go forward, focus on what works well, and know that you're doing the best you can.
I love that. Today, our conversation has been with Mary Lou Hernandez, who is a licensed clinical social worker with Banner Alzheimer's Institute. Mary Lou, we appreciate you helping us to better understand, be gentle with ourselves, and find peace and untangle the topic of arguments and Alzheimer's disease.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org. And follow us on Facebook to learn more about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.